This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Sendung Wellenlänge. Vous écoutez la transmission longueur d'onde. Udite la trasmissione lunghezza d'onde. You are hearing the transmission called wavelength.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And this is part two of a programme on mod music with my guest Dan Wilson. Sorry, Wilson.
Yep, Wilson or Wilson is interchangeable.
Okay. Yep. Thank you, Dan, for coming back. This is part two. Part one was last week. Entitled Mod Music, which of course is nothing to do with mods, as we, as some people might know them. It's short for modular.
Module file format.
Okay.
I don't think last week there was so much to cram in. It seems like there's a scope for a second part which concentrates more on looping and sampling and the actual guts of the mod sound, maybe.
Okay. For people that didn't listen last week or haven't, maybe have never even listened before. You are a sound artist.
Yes, I suppose. Yeah.
You only suppose. Well, there's a hesitancy there. No. What else could you be?
Well, I can't survive on it. I'd like to say I'm a researcher, sound artist, historian, but I'm not.
Because you're not.
Technically, I'm not because I don't earn anything from it. So,
Do you think you have to earn something to be called such a thing? You know, I mean, do you have to earn money from something to be described as an artist?
I don't know. That's a good question. Actually, that's opening up a can of worms.
Yes. But does this?
Do you need a trust fund?
Does this suggest a lack of confidence, perhaps?
Possibly. Last week you commented on the condition of my laptop being very out of date and decrepit.
Well, because you found it in a skip, didn't you?
In a bit. Well, it's outside an old people's home in a bin.
Right. And it's a Dell.
It's a Dell.
Dating from the 90s?
Well, to early 2000s, probably.
Okay.
But I've actually downgraded it slightly to help it run 90s software, which we'll be presenting today.
Exactly. So that's an essential piece of kit for your thesis.
I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah. You couldn't do it with a modern Apple.
You could with an emulator, but I just felt like it's my computer, so I'm used to it. It's like a guitarist would still be using an old, an old guitar.
Well, that's interesting. So our computers in that in itself is interesting, isn't it? That computers Do they have a distinctive sound, like an old guitar, like a, whatever it might be, a Stratocaster or something? Or I don't know much about guitars.
They've got a kind of, what's the word, calisthenic? Is that a word?
It is a word. I don't know what it means.
They've got the kind of, you know where your fingers are supposed to go. And I think with the newer computers, I'm just a bit disorientated by the new butterfly switches. I haven't got one. I haven't got a new computer anyway. But if I did have one, I'd be a bit, you know, the screen resolution is different. The sound wouldn't be different, I don't think. But
no, okay.
It's just
okay.
Look at all the plugs this has got on it.
It's got serial bits, hasn't it?
Well, it's got keys, but
can you get electrocuted off one of these? I mean, where the key is missing, if you sort of stab that with your finger, could you get electrocuted?
I've never tried it. It's okay. It's J, which is the least used key, I think.
Right.
Well, in letters anyway. Yeah. It feels okay. I'm putting my finger in there now.
All right. Your alter ego is Meadow House
and Radionics Radio,
okay,
which is an attempt to embody thoughts within microtonal music, electronic music, and one quarter of oscillatorial binage, which uses principally found objects, hence binage.
Right, okay. And is it your... you try to only... your music is created acoustically mostly?
Yeah, I'd say it was.
Yeah.
But originally...
You make a feature of that in a way, don't you?
Because
It sounds... To somebody like myself, it would probably sound like electronic music, but in actual fact, you're just using found objects and instruments and so on.
Certainly Meadow House was very acoustic, lots of microphones and things, and even actually Radionics Radio, which is explicitly electronic, was using actual loudspeakers placed in rooms with microphones placed at certain distances, pendulum microphones and moving mics and things like that. So that was all very electroacoustic. But today, we'll be looking at something that's explicitly electronic computer music,
okay,
which is basically where I got my start, really, in doing mod music and tracking and sequencing.
Yeah. Run me through it again, briefly. I mean, I almost can't get a handle on it at all, but we sort of tried to explain it last week.
Yeah.
But it's something that started in the 90s, is that right?
Yeah.
Almost as video game music.
Yeah, but it started as a kind of video game soundtrack music, and it became used... by musicians to show off their dexterity in the demo scene. And also not just computer games, but cracked computer games, so that the music took on a kind of illicit edge almost, because programmers and groups of hackers were pirating games, which would have been retailing at £20 or something, and they'd be providing cracked pirate copies illegally,
right.
And often they'd celebrate their success at cracking a game by adding something called a crack intro or cracktro to the beginning of the disc, and at the beginning would be a piece of music, and it would be like a celebratory little dance. It'll be like a celebratory...
When you say cracked, is that like a glitch of some sort?
It means there's a copy protection that would be on the commercially bought game.
Okay.
And the programmers would try to crack the copy protection.
So it's breaking into something.
Yeah, like it's like a programming breaking into it and changing it.
What would motivate somebody to do that in the first place? Why the fascination with this area?
Well, I think you'd have to go back in time to the 90s and ask the same question. It was the kind of edge. It was the cutting edge of. Right. I don't know how else to.
Mm. So it's some people trying to sort of move sideways in a way. It's a sort of a step into out of what was going on at the time.
I think it was a subculture. I think it was a very niche. It's particularly mod music. The group of the culture of mod musicians was arguably smaller than the more broader demo scene, which is crack intros and people programming graphics things and doing quirks and things with processors, pushing computers to their limits and doing demo parties where they'd show their programming prowess. They've made a laptop produce a 3D wireframe model of John Major's head or something, and
right.
It would rotate. And
but are you saying that this culture, the culture we're talking about, is it was moving away from that? Because that is like a sort of virtuoso you know, brilliant piece of technology.
Yeah.
You know, but this is trying to step sideways and...
Well, I don't know, it's weird.
You know, using almost detritus or something.
Well, it's kind of like the virtuosity and the rest was all kind of lumped in the same. It couldn't escape anywhere. It was almost like, I think nowadays a lot of the people that were in the demo scene are quite successful programmers now,
are
possibly
they?
Even okay. doing security programming for banks or something like that. But they're originally, it was all in the same boat. You'd have hackers, mod musicians, kind of all in the same scene.
Right.
And I just mentioned the demo scene because that's more likely to resonate with listeners than mod music per se,
okay.
as a standalone culture.
So people would have heard of the demo scene as a genre?
Okay,
which leads us where? To chip music?
No, well, that's, I think we wasted a lot of time, I wasted a lot of time last week talking about chip music,
okay.
when actually it's fairly well, you know, even Malcolm McLaren, as you said last week,
yes.
has latched onto chip music.
Right.
And it's basically music made with the sound synthesis capabilities of a computer. So it's generating its own waveforms. Mod music is distinct because it uses sampling. And I'm hoping today we can do a bit of sampling. In fact, I was sampling your intro that you played.
Well, I was
today.
Hoping you would, which is why I played my alternative intro, which features the coughing of Hugh de la Cruz and then the multilingual speech by Captain Maurice Seddon, deceased, who tried to... He did the wavelength intro. I can't remember now. I think he did French, Italian, English...
German, wasn't
German,
it?
Of course. It would be German, yeah. So there's three versions of You Are Listening to Wavelength. And I was sort of hoping you might be able to do something with those.
Well,
and perhaps even create a whole new intro for me.
Let's see. I've got the recordings here.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're very.
Am
loud.
I supposed to bring this thing up at this point? Are
yeah.
We supposed to, should I bring your machine up, as it were?
Very cautiously, because this coughing is. So that was Hugh de la Cruz.
Yes.
Coughing. Hugh de la Cruz, for listeners who don't know, he's the inventor of perpetual motion. No, sorry. He calls them... Well, they're not... He believes he's invented a form of highly efficient machine, highly efficient dynamics that verge on perpetual motion.
Yes, and he's the star of my film, It's My Own Invention,
yes.
for which you did the soundtrack.
Yes.
So he is known to both of us.
Yeah, yeah. And this is his signature... And this becomes a note. When you've sampled it, you can go. That's EastEnders intro.
So you're using Hugh's cough, but then you're sort of playing the keyboard.
Yeah.
Are you literally using the keyboard like a...
Piano.
Like a piano. So you know which notes you're hitting to get the EastEnders theme.
Yeah, yeah. That,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So you can do chords as well. Oh no, it's not a very. This isn't a very musical note, actually. I can choose something a bit more musical, maybe even the cuckoo clock, maybe towards the end. I'll see if I can grab a portion of that.
Hmm.
One of the interesting things about mod music is actually you can get down to the waveform level. So let me just examine this. You've got a tone in there, that cuckoo tone. And one of the things that mods or mod software can do is grab a periodic slice of this cuckoo tone, like this, which should turn the cuckoo into a note.
Right.
So then you can... And you can create an instrument from that one.
Right. So you created three notes there when you were holding one down. So you're just holding down one.
Yeah, I was holding three down.
Okay.
So that's an interesting thing. And also the loop can be of any length. So the loop can go to the periodic level of the tone, or it can go to a much more rhythmic level of this, something like. or even longer to get a more rhythmic. And you can just, build up pieces like that.
How does this differ from, I mean, I'm complete ignoramus about this stuff, but how does that differ from, say, one of these software packages that you get on an Apple, which is called, say, what is it called, GarageBand or something?
It's very different because, firstly, on the superficial level, it scrolls in a different direction. Hmm. GarageBand also is mainly MIDI. You've got pre-supplied instruments. The sampling capabilities aren't very powerful.
Right. This
software that I'm using here is actually Renoise. So this is actually based on earlier mod software. It's the most powerful tracker-based piece of software available.
Okay.
And it does all the things that classic trackers can do. Fast Tracker 2, Impulse Tracker, the looping, the various vibratos you can put on it. It is almost like programming, and you can really tell that a lot of these trackers are based on programmers' own solutions to make music, because
these are software packages.
Yeah.
Are they all outdated packages? Is this all something that is from the past, which you have to
Renoise isn't. In fact, it's still. I think Aphex Twin uses Renoise, and so a lot of these people are using Renoise, it's based on earlier software like Fast Tracker 2. In fact, you've even got somewhere in front of you there the PC format CD from. June.
Okay. I'm holding up a CD case now, which Dan. Yeah, this says PC format, issue 58, July 1996. What is this? What am I holding here?
It's a cover disc that came with some mod software. It included Scream Tracker, an early version of Impulse Tracker, and Fast Tracker 2.
Uh-huh.
And this is the first time where. Really, it became quite overground for people that didn't have access to modems and things like that, or PC owners at least.
Right.
Before that, you had in Amiga cover discs as far back as 1991 that were giving away Pro Tracker and software like that to use. A lot of the software shareware or freeware.
Why were they giving it away? What was the intention of giving it to people?
Because it was fun. They're certainly not selling it on the cover of that CD, though. There's nowhere on the cover does it say that this contains this. It's just playable demos of commercial games and things. So it gives an indication of how underground it was. And it was very much an internet phenomena as well. So it was really bringing what was on the internet to people that didn't have internet access.
And I mean, this thing, Settlers 2, is that relevant to what we're talking about?
No. That's just
a
game. That's just one of the advertisers. I mean, I suppose they get paid by the games companies to include these things.
So these CDs would have a package of things on then?
And hidden away in one of the folders was Fast Tracker 2 and a selection of submissions from various readers, and hopefully we can play a few of those, or one of those maybe.
Right.
In fact, you could play one now if you
feel
inclined.
Should we play something now?
Yeah.
All right. Where are we?
This is a very short track.
Which track number is it?
So somewhere on that CD in the directory submit is something which is on corresponds to track number 4 on what you've got there, and it's by Herman Hurst, and it's made with burp samples. It's called Burpaholic. Thank you.
When does that date from? 1996?
1995, 96, I think. Okay. It was one of the reader submissions to the cover disc, and they were immortalised on CD.
Right. That's quite a radical idea at that time, wasn't it? Do you think?
Yeah,
using
yeah.
burps? I mean, he's quite sort of... And there's a letter. Have you typed this out? This letter actually came with the CD.
That was a text file included in the same directory as the song you just heard,
which you've had printed out.
Yeah, just
so
to
I could read
illustrate
it.
Some of the culture, the background to this.
So this dates from 1996. From is there a name on here?
Herman Hurst is the
Herman
name.
Herman Hurst. It's at the top. Herman Hurst of Nottingham. He was living in Nottingham at the time, and he actually says, I'm only 15 and spend most of my time being skint. Although I seem to buy a new box of discs practically every month, I never seem to have any spare. So he's created this on something called, is it Scream Tracker 3?
Yes. Yep.
And he's donated it then. He's submitted it like a sort of magazine submission.
Yeah, in the hope that he can be on the cover disc and you know, all the readers could get to listen to his music.
Did he achieve a sort of breakthrough eventually, or
he's ungoogleable now. I don't think that's his real name. Herman Hurst must have been a pseudonym anyway.
But right.
He did more than music. He did a few graphics things on there as well.
Right. Okay. Fine. Where do we go from here, Dan? What are we going to do? It's like we've got all this stuff here. Well, what are you going to do? You want to play something else, or are we going to create something out of the wavelength?
I've got a little collection of samples here from the Hugh De La Cruz and the Maurice, the Dogs and the Cuckoo Clock.
Yeah.
But I could do with some other more rhythmic thing. What have you got around here that makes sound?
Well, I have got a record which I brought in that you probably don't. I mean, should we just? I mean, I could play a bit of that. If you don't like it, we'll just take it off. What do you think? Or are you not keen?
Play that one, because I think there's...
The other one. Well, these are two records which are at least 10 years old.
I prefer the look of that one.
So this one's called Chopper Chips.
It's the lollipop thing, isn't it?
It's a coloured 45 RPM thing, which I bought. It says on the back, Toshiyuki Kobayashi, Main Pal Inv... Radio Gagaku.
Main Pal. I think that's Goody Pal.
Is it?
And that would make perfect sense for this show, because he had a background in mod tracking music.
Right. Well, you're the first person to know anything about this record at all. I did play it once on Wavelength years ago, but let's give this a spin. And if you don't like it, we'll just take it off.
Okay, I'll just sample some of it.
All right.
Mr. tell me your story.
I'm the gagaku performer. The gagaku is the Japanese traditional ancient music. But I play not only the gagaku, the traditional pieces. I play my original own music, and with the gagaku instruments, with a synthesizer or a piano or something like that. I'm just Work on the imperial household till 5 years ago.
Did you feel you had to escape?
Yes, I have to be free because I'm in the imperial household agency. I'm not allowed to release the CD or to make concert or release the CD or to make concert or CD or I'm not allowed to release the CD or to make concert or release the CD or release the CD or to make concert or do something like that.
I think it's ended.
That was very odd.
It is very odd, isn't it? He almost sounds like a prisoner or something, as though he's sort of kind of...
He sounds like, yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
I'm glad you said that. I thought you'd understand it fully and say, ah, yes, I remember him.
I don't think that was main power. That was must have been the other side.
I'll quickly put the other side on, see if it makes any more... Anything to do with what you're talking about?
It sounds like there's a lot of sampling going on in there.
Right.
I don't know who... Do you know anything about that?
Not a thing. I mean, they're very attractive little records. They kind of got these patterns. This is the other one, which is called Nokia, but there's even less information on that.
Where did you get these?
I can't honestly remember. but it was a long time ago. It must be 10 years ago. I don't know how old they were then. They might be even older than that, I suppose. But does this have any relationship to what we're talking about today? Or
I believe the one you just played has, okay. Especially if Mainpal is involved. Mainpal is a pseudonym for a Finnish, I think he's Finnish, composer called Gudipal. I think his name's Pal something. But he went to school at the Rudolf Steiner School, which was prohibited electronics. And he was doing all secret computer hacking things on the side. So he's got an interesting backstory.
Right. Okay.
I don't know. Do you know which one of those was his contribution or is it a collaboration?
I have no idea. It just says Toshiyuki Kobayashi. I'll pass it over to you. Have a read there. There's some lettering there.
They're amazing things.
They are nice looking things, aren't they? They're nice little. They're very solid looking 45 RPM discs, which are all sort of coloured, you know, red and with patterns and lettering and so on. This one's called Nokia Connecting People. I mean, should I?
That just looks like a free giveaway thing from a train station, like some mobile phone.
Yes, but it isn't. I'll put it on for a second. You can take it off if you want.
Is it from?
If it doesn't seem to be relevant, then we'll just take it. It's interesting you're saying you mentioned a Finnish composer. Of course, this one's called Nokia.
Yeah.
And that is a Finnish company, wasn't it? So maybe there is some connection.
That looks, I wasn't expecting it to sound like that. That looks like a corporate giveaway thing. And obviously that's a deceptive.
Yes. I mean, they're quite subtle, aren't they, do you think?
Yeah, they're very nice, actually.
Yeah.
As you're playing them, I've been sampling them and trying to mix them in with bits and bobs.
Right.
That we've collected throughout the show.
Good. Excellent.
I'm kind of doing it blindly because I couldn't quite hear what I'm doing.
Right.
Would you like to hear the results?
I would indeed, yes. I'd love to hear
them. I've got no idea what they sound like, really, because I haven't been... That's part of the joy of, you know, sampling that...
So we're composing live on air here.
We never know. You might get... It's like alchemy. We don't know what we're mixing up something. Something might spring out as being particularly interesting.
Good.
So... Shall I begin?
Please do.
It goes like this. Oh. For the time being.
Well, it's interesting. I could hear things in there. I could hear the dog barking. I can hear Hugh coughing.
Yeah.
I heard Morris in German saying Wellenlänger.
Yeah, there's a bit of... I haven't used all of the things I've sampled. I missed this nice cough here, actually. Actually, that's not nice, is it?
Well, it's a nice bit where he says, excuse me. He suddenly stopped. He says, excuse me.
Where was that? That's quite a nice ending, actually, if we can find that bit.
Excuse me.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that could be the ending. That's quite a nice... Anyway, sorry.
It's coming on.
Yeah, maybe we should play something that speaks of the wonders of mod a bit more, some of the virtuosic maestros.
What you were doing, what you've just played, is that mod?
Yes. Technically, it derives itself from mod music because it uses sampling and it's in a tracker piece of software, which can be anything. Mod music can be anything because it can sample even the smallest waveform. Like, I can take a part of Hugh's coughing and loop, just as I showed with the cuckoo clock, and create a tone from even the noisiest of sources. Which, technically, that sounds electronic, but it's actually a sample. So mod can disguise itself as various things, as we discussed in the last program.
You played one, was it by Zach Oren?
Yeah.
Which, to my ear, it just sounded like guitar music. But you were telling me it was something else.
Well, he'd sampled his guitar, and if you listen closely, you can hear the 8-bit crunch of the guitar.
Right.
It's quite cleverly done. He's a very musical mod musician. He's gone on to bigger things now. He's done that recorded game music things and things for actual commercial software.
And is this an ongoing genre? I mean, the people that, you know, it's people still creating mod music now, or is it a totally dated sort of...
It's fragmented now. All the original mod composers are probably using professional workstations now, if they're still doing music. But there's people like Goody Powell, the main pal, the record you just played, who are still flying the flag. Aphex Twin uses it sometimes. Not all composers admit to using tracking software. There's a kind of, there's some mystique in not giving away what software you use.
Right.
But I suspect there's more people than who claim to use this software out there.
Right. Okay. All right.
If you, there's an example of... on that CD you just had, the Burps, Burpaholic. Contrast that to another appearance on that CD of a piece of music, track one, which is Asteroid Belt ZBB8 by MG from Weird Magic, a demo group.
Right. Should we play that now?
Yeah, it's a very virtuosic piece of mod music.
Zulu Bravo 68 Alpha, calling home base Earth. Thank you.
So when does that date from?
That dates from about 1995, I think.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, so what is the sort of, what's the difference between that and, say, you know, Switched on Bach by Wendy Carlos?
Well, it's interesting. I was saying mod music can be whatever it wants to be. This is aiming at electronic sound, and like Wendy Carlos's synthesizers, it samples a lot of synthesizer sounds. But although it sounds like it's being synthetically produced, it's actually samples of synthesizers on a micro level, like Q's coughing. They've taken the waveform of the synthesizer and just looped part of the period in the waveform to create a very convincing electronic sounding piece of music.
Right. Okay.
So it's dissimilar from Wendy Carlos that it's not genuinely using synthesizers. It's using sampling of synthesizers.
Right. I see. Yeah. Okay. I think. All right. So this brings us to a track which you've discovered, which coincidentally happens to be called Wavelength.
Yeah, I was rummaging through my old compositions, and there's one from 1996, one of my first attempts. It's called Wavelength. It's almost like I was destined
indeed. At that point in time, you were aiming for this moment in time.
And it contains many different samples of Radio 4, The Archers, I think, is slowed down somehow, and electric guitar stabs and things. It's quite cheesy.
So you were experimenting with this technology at that time?
Yeah. I'd heard that weird magic thing along with other Burpaholic on that CD and just experimented with what could be produced in Fast Tracker 2.
Right.
Some samples are like recorded myself, and some of the samples are taken from other modules. So keen listeners might even hear that When the Levee Breaks by Led Zeppelin, the drum break, which was a popular drum sample towards the end. It's not as I'd warn listeners, it's not as easy on the ears as that last one.
Which track number is it?
Number 3.
Okay, all right. Well, let's give this a try. So this is called Wavelength, and you are, in fact, listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. We'll be right back. Well, we've just been joined by somebody in the studio asking what this is all about.
Yeah, it's quite an unusual choice for wavelength in general, or for resonance even, maybe.
Is it? All right.
Possibly okay. not for
well, resonance. Well, that track was called Wavelength.
It was. What a coincidence.
Indeed. And that was by Dan Wilson, composed in 1996.
Yeah. I was very young. I mean, it's quite relentless and it's a bit of a racket, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, bear that in mind.
What happened to it at the time? Was there a sort of a... What happens to any of this music?
That's a good question. It goes. There were archives, and that you'd be rated at the Hornet Archives. Tracks in space. You could upload them. You could send them to your friends. Host them on a website. You'd be part of a web ring. So pre Google, you'd be kind of join a web ring for experimental or mod music,
right.
And you'd be in this ring linked with other sites, and people would find you and listen to your music, and then you'd get credited because a lot of these modules had inbuilt text files. You could have little messages saying shout out to William English, thanks for the samples, and so you'd credit other people and put your website and things like that.
So was it a very tight-knit community, or did it spread like wildfire around the world?
Well, it was quite tight-knit, but it was also...
How tight-knit?
geographically, I think it was everywhere. I think there were people in America doing things in
But your
Australia.
Track, for example, this track that you made in 1996, would that have had widespread interest at the time, or was it just you and 10 other people?
Well, it was sampled by Dionysos Industries, a Swedish collective of trackers, and they used one of the really gritty drum sounds that I'd actually recorded a friend at school playing drums in a room.
Right.
And they just wanted to use it for some reason. They actually used it in a much more creative and interesting way than I did.
So you were saying that there's a Led Zeppelin bit in there somewhere?
Yeah, towards
the
end.
When the levee breaks.
It's a very boomy...
I mean, if someone recognised that bit in there and say, hang on a minute, that's the Led Zeppelin piece, even though it's only like 10 seconds long and looped or something. Well, can that become a problem?
No, that was celebrated. In fact, that was, I mean, the Amen drum loop is the Winston Brothers, isn't it? I can't remember. That's a famous drum break. And the sampling was everywhere, and these were just almost like tiny audio memes.
Right.
And it was just like a small thrill of recognition if you managed to recognise it.
Right.
They were just breaks that everyone could take, and it was a free-for-all, really.
Right. So what's the state of play these days with this? Do you still pursue this line of composition?
Well, you can never... Having grown up with it, it's difficult to escape from it completely. Even when I'm using a four-track tape recorder, I'm still thinking in terms of metricality and sequences and things. Hmm. And certainly the Radionics Radio project, which... I had to create my own piece of custom software, which is based visually on tracker software, to generate microtonal notes, because it's very difficult to get microtonal harmonies to an exact frequency in tracker software. It's actually geared up for equal temperament rather than experimental tunings. So I had to kind of echo back to my kind of earlier days to draw upon those softwares of yesterday.
Okay, all right. What's are you playing with oscillatorial binage at any time soon, or what do you play or
possibly
perform?
We are active, and we're looking for gigs. Actually, if anyone wants to commission a post electronic oscillatorial binage, improvisation, and
so this is you, Chris Weaver,
Farry Bradley and Toby Clarkson.
Okay, so you're a four-piece...
Yeah, quartet.
Quartet.
Which is unusual. It makes it difficult for gigs, actually, because you have to split the fee four ways, which is... God knows
that's
how...
That's not so unusual, surely.
Well, there are bands... I'm trying to think of a band like the Polyphonic Spree that had like 20 or 50 members. Yeah. I don't know how they distribute the...
They just split... They just divide each other. I suppose there might not be much left at the
end. In the experimental music, there's not necessarily...
No. All right. But what else do you do? You're a researcher.
Yeah, I call myself a researcher. I've got lots of interests, obsessions, and... I'm interested in fouled histories, and this is one of them. I think the history.
Is it? Oh, that's interesting. So you regard this as a failed history?
I think I mentioned this last week. I shouldn't really say that, because people that still fly the flag strongly for purist mod music in the scene as it was.
Uh-huh.
So it's ongoing.
So you're drawn to failed things.
Yeah. And I use the term fouled in reference to a term used by the physicist and acoustician Robert Schumacher, as in fouled subharmonics. So I'm actually drawing an acoustical analogy, which is basically a blip or a piece of non-periodic grit that appears in real-world acoustical sounds, which are very difficult to synthesize. So if you're playing a tuba, for instance, there may be a tiny click or blip in the tone, which it could be a piece of spit or something that's gone into the mouthpiece. And instead of sustaining itself as a subharmonic, as a presence in the tone, it just doesn't go anywhere. It never bounces. It never recurs. And I see that as an analogy in history where an event or person doesn't periodically recur in the continuum of history. So they're just a kind of blip, and then they're never periodically rehashed whenever they need to be. Like Wendy Carlos, for instance, we spoke about just now. That's something that's all often talked about in the history of electronic music. But someone like Stephen Bleasdale, for instance, isn't rehashed. He invented the metal pig. He's a Manchester-based artist who does politically motivated noise on a trolley, adapted trolley, with sofa springs stretched across it. At a time when not many other people were doing this, like 1990s.
When you mentioned the tuba thing, the only thing I could come up with is when guitarists, you know, if someone's playing a piece on a guitar, on an acoustic guitar, you might hear a squeak as they run their finger, which is almost, is actually unintended. Really, yeah. But it's a necessary part of the, you just accept it as being a sort of a noise which has occurred during the playing of that guitar.
Yeah.
Is that a complete?
No, that's not a subharmonic, that's an unintentional thing.
But how's the spittle in the tuba any different from that?
It's
a sort of sidebar to the, it's unintended. You couldn't call it an accident as such, but it's something that...
That was a bad example.
Was it?
He uses wind instruments and also bowed instruments as an analogy, Robert Schumacher. So a fouled subharmonic could be when you're bowing an instrument, and there's just... Which is, bowed instruments are very susceptible to subharmonics. And you could be playing the instrument and it just about to career into a subharmonic, but it doesn't. It just exists as a click or a pop that never actually recurs as a buzz, as an undertone.
Okay.
So it's something that's offered up to the wave train. It's being produced by, and it's inherently part of the tone, but it's just never reconciled into a constant tone, into a periodic tone.
Right.
If that makes sense.
I should just quickly say you've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. Today's guest is the sound artist Dan Wilson, you've got LPs out on the under the name Meadow House.
Yeah, there's Tongue Under a Ton of Nine Volters, and there's also some more recent ones, Misadventures on the Scorn Cycle and This Should Not Be Happening.
Okay. As so LPs. Three albums.
Yeah, there's also Attempts albums? And Results, which is more obscure. That was on an obscure label, but that's rarity.
Well, thank you very much for coming in, Dan.
Thanks.
You must come back. There seems to be so much more to say about all of this. Should we play another track?
There's a very short one.
Selection.
Frank Panucci, Crackers from Under the Sea, track 5.
Very succinct, isn't it?
That was a short piece by Frank Panucci. He's also using When the Levee Breaks, Speed It
Really?
Up.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that seems to be a favoured... Why? What's the attraction of When the Levee Breaks? Why is that such a hot property?
It's just such a nice drum loop. People like it.
Okay.
And it's very amenable to sampling speeding up.
Was that... that's John Paul Jones, isn't it? Or not? Is it? No, John Bonham. The John Bonham was the drummer with Led Zeppelin, wasn't he? Who is no more, of course. Yeah. I think he died a few years ago. All right, we've got a few seconds left. We could play another. Who's this guy again?
Frank Panucci. This is some of his early mod music.
All right, well, we'll finish up with this. Thanks again, Dan, for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.